Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, for the past couple of days, we've had commentary in a number of different ways in the reaction to the murder-suicide involving Javon Belcher, the late linebacker of the Kansas City Chiefs, who murdered his girlfriend-slash-mother of his child on Saturday morning before taking his own life in the Kansas City Chiefs parking lot. Bob Costas then on Sunday night quoted at length a Jason Whitlock column blaming the gun culture in America, and then was flabbergasted to find out that people took his commentary to suggest that there should be more gun control in this country. Nonetheless, he went on the Dan Patrick Show, and Dan Patrick is his colleague at NBC. He hosts the studio portion of the show and the halftime show. Costas did admit one thing, though, yesterday, which I guess is a little bit of a concession, and it's one of the things we criticized him for on Monday, and that's that he shouldn't have brought up such an incendiary topic in such a brief window of time. Here's what he had to tell Dan Patrick on Tuesday.
There are a number of issues related to this that we could begin to talk about and think about. The problem was that I didn't have enough time to get to many of them. And that, I think, was my mistake, to be quite honest, Dan. A friend of mine in broadcasting pointed this out to me yesterday, and I agree with him. He said, you violated your own rule, because we had had this discussion before. I've always said, if you're going to get into touchy topics, nuanced topics, make sure that you have enough time to flesh them out, that you have enough time to make yourself fully understood, or save them for forums where you do.
And now, Jim, I don't have a ton of sympathy for Costas. He complained to Dan Patrick that he only found out at the start of the first quarter that he would only have a minute and 15 seconds for commentary. That's an hour and a half. If you can't figure out whether or not you have enough time to talk about a touchy subject or how to script your commentary in 90 seconds or less in an hour and a half, that doesn't seem like a huge challenge to me. But at least he is conceding that he probably shouldn't have done it in the way that he did it.
Greg, to his credit, Bob Costas was utterly transfixed by the white-knuckle excitement of that Eagles-Cowboys game in the first half. The Eagles and their eight-game losing streak and such. The reason I'd say this is a good martini is we've seen, Keith Olbermann was every bit as political on when they had their Sunday night football night in America.
Sure.
For 1 year, we had to suffer through his, you know, political side comments and snarky comments and stuff like that. And eventually NBC wised up and realized that that was not something that they wanted to mix in with their sports coverage. I'm glad that Costas even acknowledged he did anything wrong. I mean, plenty of times we've seen folks in these circumstances kind of indicate that it's everybody else. It's the listening audience that is a problem, that's in the wrong. That the idea that he acknowledged he did anything wrong is a step in the right direction. Clearly, Bob Costas is still pro-gun control, and I don't think anything's going to really dissuade him of that. However, it is kind of interesting that if he had talked about is football a violent sport and does it facilitate a culture of violence within players, we could have that debate. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that assessment, but it's a debate you can have. You can talk about the head injuries, concussions, does that affect the mental health of players and stuff like that. All of those issues, I would argue, don't really break down along partisan lines or ideological lines. You know, I don't know if there's a traditional conservative viewpoint on head injuries in the NFL and whether the NFL is doing enough to handle that sort of thing. I had mentioned in the jolt the celebrity culture and the degree to which people who are famous and wealthy from professional athletics or Hollywood or stuff like that tend to believe that the laws and rules don't apply to them, and thus you end up with these kind of violent outbursts, et cetera, Chris Brown and so on. There are a whole bunch of topics that, you know, Bob Costas could have legitimately gotten into, but he picked the one that broke down amongst ideological lines. And, you know, I think what really drove gun owners and pro-Second Amendment folks crazy about that comment was the idea of being the most convenient scapegoat, the easiest thing to point fingers to and say, well, let's not talk about any of these other issues. Let's go to the designated boogeyman over this situation, which is gun owners and the gun culture and all that stuff. So the fact that Bob Costas is admitting it's not as simple as he seemed to imply in those comments, I think about as close to a victory as we're going to get in these sorts of situations.
Yeah, probably so. And he was contrite, as you mentioned. A lot of people wouldn't necessarily admit that they had done anything wrong. I thought he lost a little bit of credibility, though, later when he said, I was just trying to bring out one aspect of a multifaceted debate that should follow something like this. I gave my audience too much credit. And at that point, I had to cringe a little bit again to suggest, obviously, that those who were critical of him weren't smart enough to keep up with what he was trying to do. So, but kudos to him for at least admitting where he realizes he erred there. On to martini number two now. We shouldn't expect a lot from Detroit. As a person who's born and raised in Michigan, I have come to expect nothing but bad news to come out of Detroit. Now, in the wake of the election and the re-election of Barack Obama, it is payback time, according to Detroit Councilwoman Joanne Watson. She wants the big bucks to roll out of Washington.
After the election of Jimmy Carter, the Honorable Coleman Alexander Young, he went to Washington, D.C. He came back home with some bacon.
Right.
That's what you do. That's what you do. This is our people, in an overwhelming way, supported the re-election of this president, and there ought to be a quid pro quo, and you ought to exercise leadership on that. Of course, not just that, but why not?
It's not often you hear a politician specifically and literally call for the quid pro quo, Jim, but that's the way these big city Democratic political machines work, and Detroit certainly needs help, but the federal government getting more involved, I'm pretty sure, isn't the answer.
Why not? I can think of about 16 trillion reasons why not to, you know, just bail out Detroit because of the terrible, you know, financial decisions they've made, the vast overspending, the pensions that are unsustainable, et cetera, et cetera. We talked a bit about Michigan earlier in the week. Detroit's circumstances are still every bit the you know, fiscal and quality of life nightmare that we ever imagined. We shouldn't be surprised by this. I will say that I do think that the councilwoman does make one very valid point. We've had a lot of discussion this past month about why Mitt Romney lost, why the results were so disappointing for folks on the right. And Greg, she puts her finger on one very key point. I think we can all safely say the Mitt Romney campaign did not have nearly enough bacon. It's kind of the cultural meme du jour. Every, you know, bacon goes with everything. It also goes with presidential campaigns. So, you know, the idea of demanding federal taxpayers provide the bacon, or we borrow money from China to provide more bacon for Detroit, is pretty appalling. But at least we have to, you know, we have to appreciate her taste in metaphors.
Yeah, absolutely right. I wouldn't mind some actual bacon.
You almost were tempted to like send her a package of bacon. Say, will you stop trying to get the taxpayers to bail you out if I send you a package of bacon? Will that be enough?
Yes, and her homage to Coleman Young. Coleman Young is the biggest reason why Detroit is the way it is right now. On to martini number three now. And Jim, a lot of hand-wringing, a lot of political and sports-type metaphors coming as we get closer and closer to the fiscal cliff. Republican press conference this morning saying the next 72 hours are critical, so the media is going to be all ginned up for this. But apparently it's a big yawn fest up on Wall Street, according to the Washington Post today. No big fluctuations in the market based on news that the two sides are getting further and further apart, and there's a very real chance we could go over the fiscal cliff. The Post seems to suggest it could be because ultimately they think a deal will be struck, or potentially that even if we do go over the cliff, it won't be as cataclysmic as people are fearing. So the bad news here is, of course, that if the markets were in a bit of fluctuation right now and chaos, that would perhaps provide more incentive for both sides, and in particular the White House, to at least play a little bit fair here. But apparently the yawn fest is just going to give more ammo, I think, to Obama.
It's a very strange phenomenon there. Well, I don't know. Clearly, you know, Wall Street and Washington don't totally understand each other. And so I don't know whether the folks in Wall Street are a heck of a lot smarter than the rest of us and totally convinced of, they always reach a deal at the 11th hour anyway. It's going to be hunky-dory. Don't you worry about this. Or whether like they're really insightful, or whether they're just unbelievably naive. You know, in every one of their commercials, it always says past performance is not a guarantee of future results. And here we have a president who seems totally convinced that you know, he got everything he needed to hear about his negotiating position on Election Day. He went golfing. He does the rally. So he puts down a offer that most Republicans treat as a joke. And what's more, almost seems designed to ruin the negotiations, almost seems designed to insult the House Republicans and make them less likely to make any compromise. So if there's anything that will motivate these guys to give some ground and reach anything in the middle, it's going to be that, you know, the market saying, we don't like this. We are starting to panic. You're starting to destroy wealth. Do something. Do something. This is not to dig in your heels. And they're not doing that. So there we go. The markets have a chance to send a signal to Washington, and it seems they are choosing not to. out of a faith that things are going to take care of themselves. And man, oh man, you know, like, you can't call DC naive when this is the kind of thinking you see in Wall Street. You know, it's kind of one of the suspicions of neither side completely understand each other. They talk about completely misjudging the culture of Washington, at least at this moment, because there is no, you know, warm, fuzzy, conciliatory feelings around Washington right now these days, Greg. I mean, you know, House Republicans feel insulted by that every concession they make seems to come back with no concessions to the president. The president feels absolutely no pressure to do this, and it looks like Wall Street doesn't want to provide any pressure.
And I think Americans, of course, can be very reassured by this confidence on Wall Street because, as we saw in 2008, Wall Street always sees real chaos coming. So good luck, America.
It's a good point. Yeah, they always see the bad things coming right around the corner, right? Yeah.
Yes. Jim, we'll call it there. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. And don't forget to join us again on Thursday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.